Yeah, I got tigers and zebras and leopards. Oh my. This is a bird of some sort. Any
I
other
see a
questions?
butterfly. No, I was just wondering.
That a headband in your hair? What's it doing? Is it just there for show?
It's
Yeah.
there because I did not shower before today's show.
Oh, welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Katie Nolan. That's Mina Kimes putting in minimal effort. Pablo Torre. That's okay. I only curled the front of my hair, so.
I just showered and I feel great.
Friday.
Did last night's win make you think the Clippers can get to the finals?
I think it could have. I mean, you're not really looking for me to answer right off the top. The Clippers won last night. It was their third straight game three win this postseason after falling behind 2-0. The Suns got their first loss since May 27th, which feels like 6 months ago to me. I don't know. Was that a month ago? Paul George bounced back after a bad game, almost had a triple-double. He had 27 points. What was interesting to me, the game maker, the difference was Pat Bev. His defense on Booker was nonstop. He was in his face, mask and all. The Suns were +7 in Booker's minutes without Patrick Beverley, and they're -12 with Beverley in Booker's minutes in this series. He's just the difference maker. He takes Booker off the board. Chris Paul was back from the COVID protocol, looked rusty, almost slowed the pace down for the Suns. I think it was a big statement win. I have no idea who's going to win, but those are all the things that happened. What do you two think?
Yeah, can the Clippers make the finals? Sure. Like, they're in the Western Conference Finals. Let's stop treating this as if this would be some enormous shock. Ty Lue, again, looks to be a coach who might come back from a 2-0 deficit, three series is in a row. And the thing about Patrick Beverley, Katie, and like giving him credit for like what he's doing to Devin Booker, like the defense has been phenomenal, but there's a clear dividing line also. It's when Pat Bev broke his nose. I mean, let's just recap
Yes.
what happened here. The dude had to get eight shots in his face because there wasn't time to like put him under to reset said broken nose. And those eight shots happened to be more than he made from the field last night. He was 5 for 21. Chris Paul, 5 for 19. That is the lowest field goal percentage with that many shots of a top two superstar duo in like 25 years in the NBA playoffs. So the fact that you have a post-viral Chris Paul and this broken version of Devin Booker, who clearly isn't comfortable, makes me think that yes, a version of Paul George that is just a little bit better than the version we saw at the end of game two, this might be a 2-1 series, if not for just that.
Yeah, before the game, everybody was getting their jokes off about Devin Booker's mask. Oh, he looks like a superhero, or the Phantom of the Opera, or that episode of The Office where Dwight cut the face off the dummy and put it on his face. Because we're used to guys playing with masks and playing through them, despite the fact that it looks so uncomfortable. But clearly, Devin Booker is not right. Like, he was tugging on the mask throughout the game. This was the worst two-game stretch of his career. Since his rookie season, some of that can be attributed to professional irritant Patrick Beverley, but I think a lot of it is his mask. But it goes beyond Devin Booker, because as you mentioned, it was the duo of him and Chris Paul. And I think that's what surprised me the most. I thought CP3 coming back against Zubats in particular would be a huge win for the Suns because they'd be able to punish Zubats with the pick and roll. And that's simply not what happened. Like, if I had told you guys, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, that Patrick Beverley and Reggie Jackson would outplay Chris Paul and Devin Booker in terms of backcourts, you wouldn't have believed me, but that's exactly what's happening, and it's exactly what needs to change going forward. Booker and CP3 need to be better, otherwise the Suns might actually lose this thing.
I think I would play better, and now I'm bad at basketball, let me say that off the top. I think I would play better with a mask on.
Why?
I just for the pure superhero factor, just for the feeling of like, look, no one can see you. Just try your best, but no one will even know it's you
You
if
know
you're
what,
bad.
Katie, you raise a good point because if there's anything people really love doing these days, it's wearing a mask.
Yeah, I'm just used to it, you know? It's weird without one.
NBA beef, who you got? Scottie Pippen or KD?
I don't. No, Scottie Pippen is making a bourbon now, and I think, a memoir. He did an interview with GQ in which he took shots at KD, you know, basically criticized his shot in Game 7, said LeBron's a better player than him. He plays better team basketball. And KD had stuff to say about it on the internet because he's Kevin Durant. I really feel like you guys don't understand what a troll Kevin Durant is when he logs online. So he tweeted, "Didn't the great Scottie Pippen refuse to go in the game for the last second shot because he was in his feelings? His coach drew up the play for a better shooter." He also went in again and said, "This guy Scott," which is so disrespectful. Scott also wanted to enjoy his summer, so he chose to rehab during the season. Yo, Scottie Pippen, they followed Phil, not you. So KD watched The Last Dance. Like, we all watched it. You can't use new information. We all have that source material. It's not new. Kevin Durant just likes to do this. He likes to poke you because I think he feels people are always poking him, and so he pokes back. And then when we talk about how much he pokes back, he's like, "Why are you guys mad? You poked me first." At this point, and my relationship with the internet has evolved many times and will evolve further in the future, but at this point, it's like, yeah, I get it. Just go say what you want to say. This guy, Scott, is hilarious objectively.
Hilarious.
And
hilarious.
I'm fine with it. Also, it allows me to force Mina to say the name of the random guy that KD replied to that he saw in his Twitter replies, because this was a GQ story, but the way Kevin Durant saw it was that, who, Mina? Somebody tweeted it at him and he replied to it. What was this man's name?
I don't know. This is a tape show, and I feel like if I say the user handle of the person, it's gonna get censored.
They can bleep
it. Whatever.
It
was... Mr. Teabags. Just want to make sure I accurately represent it, which is
that's great.
Which is amazing, by the way, because I'm sure millions of people tweet at Kevin Durant all day, verify people, probably a lot of people, most people saying nice things like Kevin Durant is the GOAT, Kevin Durant is great, but somehow he's got his radar up, pardon me, for like individual replies from like the most random accounts, and I love it. And I also want to say Team KD. In this one, to go to the question of whose side of this beef am I on, Team KD, because if you read the interview, which is excellent, Tyler Tynes, the writer, he didn't ask Scotty about Kevin Durant.
Sure didn't.
Scotty brought him up unprompted, took shots, and took inaccurate shots. Like, Scottie Pippen, Hall of Famer, incredible basketball player, knows more about the game than I will ever know, but he is dead Kevin Durant played his butt off, and the notion that he didn't play team basketball is ridiculous. Scotty, what team? Who was he supposed to give the ball to? One-legged James Harden? Ice cold Joe Harris? Bruce
Brown?
Work
out these feelings, man.
Go through it. I was there with you.
Bruce Brown? Kevin Durant was literally the only star that the Nets had left. There was nothing else he could do. And by the way, he also brought in, Scotty, brought in LeBron. Oh, LeBron doesn't take that shot. I'm old enough to remember when LeBron got killed for passing to Danny Green that one time. Like, we can't have it both ways.
Well,
criticize stars for not taking shots, but also not being team players. Point is, Kevin Durant had an incredible postseason. Scottie Pippen is wrong, and Mr. Teabags, thank you for the content.
Kevin Durant has had an incredible posting season. Like, what he is doing on Twitter right now is unbelievable. And so, yes, is there a level of this conversation where we hold everybody to their various hypocrisies about basketball? Sure, and Mina laid out a bunch of stuff that I agree with fundamentally. But what I want to focus on is the fact that Scottie Pippen, perhaps, like, clearly thirsting for a spotlight that Michael Jordan tilted firmly in his direction, was drinking his own bourbon and giving interviews. And if there's any better circumstance for Tyler Tynes, GQ writer, than that specific one, I don't know what it is. Because the one thing I want, if I'm doing an interview with an athlete, is them imbibing to some degree that I will remain unclear on beyond that, because who knows how much or how little he was. But the other thing I absolutely do not want to answer this question is Kevin Durant coming at me on Twitter. So I'm on Team KD for that reason alone. So yes, please and thank you.
I mean, my biggest takeaway about the quality or the effects of this bourbon based on this interview is that it apparently turns you into the comment section of a first take YouTube video.
That's most bourbons,
go forth.
I think.
Up next on HQ.
what we're saying and or what we're sort of reckoning with right now is a particular organization that has a very recent history of misconduct when it pertains to women in the workplace that's made a very bad decision.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Only pay for what you need.
What are your thoughts on the Mavericks hiring Jason Kidd to be their next head coach?
I mean, I have many thoughts. Look, the Mavericks, we've talked about this many times on this show and other shows on this network. There's something going on with that front office, with confusion, who's in charge, too many cooks in the kitchen, not enough people, blah, 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 blah. Jason Kidd's name comes up a lot when there's a coaching vacancy. Every time it does, many of us voice concerns over his history with domestic violence. He pled guilty, I believe, in 2001. It was. Mina will correct me if I'm wrong on that. It's just a thing. The Mavs also should be noted. I believe it was 3 years ago that they had that controversy where they had an employee who was accused of domestic violence and they kept him on payroll. It's just a mess. This to me seems like a mess, and it seems like a weird mess. And I think the weirdest part about the mess for me is that we are supposed to just kind of ignore it and take the basketball part word for it. And I get it. I understand the desire to not have to talk about that kind of stuff. But when we're talking about front offices and dysfunction and opinions and relationships and all, like, this comes into that. This is a part of that. And historically, people just tend to overlook these things instead of actually addressing them, drilling down on them, and making sure that this isn't going to be a problem in the future. That the root of this problem was figured out, it was addressed, it was rehabilitated, and it's over now. I don't have that reassurance in this, and I also don't see anybody tripping over themselves to give it to us. And I think that that would be something that would go a long way, especially with an organization that doesn't have a lot of trust with the public right now, because nobody really understands what's going on.
Katie, I think you hit on something really important there, which is you're not arguing, we're not arguing, that Jason Kidd should never be a head coach again, that he doesn't deserve a second chance, that he's never, you know, appropriately addressed what's in his past. I don't know that. What we're saying and what we're sort of reckoning with right now is a particular organization that has a very recent history of misconduct when it pertains to women in the workplace that's made a very bad decision. I feel comfortable saying that. I mean, it was 2018 when Sports Illustrated came out with this investigation about, you know, multiple people in Dallas with sexual harassment, domestic violence, an employee, a staffer, Mark Cuban, the owner, knew about that and kept him on staff. He came out, apologized. They hired people. They said, we are dealing with this. Then in 2020, Sports Illustrated came out with another report about a high-ranking Mavs executive alleging that he sexually assaulted a woman. Dallas pushed back heavily on that and defended their investigation, which Sports Illustrated found out to be flawed, then quietly fired the employee, Tony Ronzoni. Later, we don't know why. Okay, so all of which is to say, I don't buy this organization's defense that they have dealt with any of this when they come out and hire Jason Kidd in particular, given his history on the issue. And if you're watching, I want you to put yourselves in the shoes of any of those women or any man or woman who has dealt with sexual assault or domestic violence and is a fan of this team watching all of this unfold. And realize for a moment that while you in the particular may not be affected by this, a lot of people will be, and a lot of people feel terrible about this today.
Yeah, there is no organization in the NBA that has been more defined by misogyny in recent years than this one. And when you examine that culture, and by the way, what they're trying to do here on one level could have been admirable, right? What are they doing? They're consulting the former stars of yore, Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Kidd, Michael Finley. They want to give those guys power. They want to give In the case of Michael Finley, for instance, and Jason Kidd, they want to give African-Americans who are underrepresented in this sport power. That is on its face cool. But for this specific team, you have to wonder how it is that an owner who is the most famous meddler in ownership in sports keeps on stepping on rakes when it comes to how he treats, by extension, women in the workplace. And there is something that is pretty disturbing here, right? Because Mark Cuban is also somebody who fancies himself, and you talk to people in this organization and they tell you he thinks he's a jock. He's a jock. He's in the layup lines. He's literally giving Boban Marjanovic advice on how to post up before games. He thinks he's one of the guys. And if you're going to be around this team enough and have all of your fingers in all of these pies and be Mr. Shark Tank, who goes on television and advises businesses on how to solve PR and business crises, and then hire Jason Kidd with this as the backdrop, it really raises questions about your basic competency as an owner, because this is a cycle that keeps on repeating. And inside that building, it seems pretty clear that the people who like to say no to Mark Cuban, they're not there anymore, if they ever were.
Do you question the impressiveness of the Cubs' no-hitter last night?
I do. I just, right off the top, I do. I don't think I'm keep answering them like he's asking me. I know that he's not. The Cubs had a no-hitter last night, but it took four pitchers to do it. They had eight walks, I believe. Here's the final pitch. Take a look. They did it. No-hitter.
I'm not gonna lie. I had no idea. I lost out, and everybody was running out. I was just locked into the game, and I was just going out there to do my job. And I mean, everybody did such a great job today.
And that makes me not as mad. That's like good. You don't want somebody to be like, "That's right, that's a no-hitter, baby." If you're like, "Oh, I didn't even know. That's pretty cool," then that's fine by me. But I don't think this should count as a no-hitter. And if it does, it should be like sacks. Like when you get, it's like everybody gets a quarter of a no-hitter on their record. I'm fine with that.
But the thing about no-hitters in general at this point is that,
right,
like,
even if
there are so many of them that none of them feel like they count for as much. Like, there are seven no-hitters this season. If you have more no-hitters in a single season than there are Fast and Furious movies, something is wrong with that as an achievement. I'm sorry. I just don't care at all anymore.
Aren't there eight? Aren't there nine Fast and the Furious
F9.
By the end of the season, there will be more no-hitters.
Sorry, I just wanted to make it.
F9 hive on me.
I'll be honest about this. I care less what the three of us think about this and more about whoever does the ESPN push alerts, right? Like, I used to get the notification every time, da-da-da-da-da-da, and I look down and be like, whoa, no-hitter going into the nine. I haven't been getting them lately, and I wonder if there was a meeting where, like, whoever decides this, I'm really opening the kimono way too much on ESPN, but I just want to know, like, did you guys all decide, along with society, that this is happening too often and we don't need the da-da-da-da-da-da for, like, a four-man no-hitter? Because I agree.
I got a push. Oh. You didn't get a push?
No.
Oh, I got a push after
it was over. It wasn't like, no hitter alert. It was like, yeah, they did it, but it took four of them to do it.
Tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, Game 7, Islanders and Lightning.
Oh, my God. Is that hockey? Did they get two new basketball teams and name them that? Is this hockey that we're... Yes! CCC! I am very intrigued. The Lightning, you may remember, but probably not, won the Stanley Cup last year. This is game seven to decide who's going to go to Stanley. We don't know if Kucherov, who is leading the NHL in goals and assists after not playing in the season because of hip surgery, we don't know if he's going to play in this game at time of recording. If you know when you're watching this, that's not my fault. I don't know right now at this time. But what we have for you in true HQ nature is a clip of a different hockey game when the Canadians show the clip.
Oh,
you hear
two,
the excitement in everyone's voice watching a clip of hockey. God.
I mean, shout out to you,
woo!
French Canadia.
You guys are doing such a good job. God, that's a nasty goal, but it's just hard for me to show excitement. It's like I show excitement about hockey, and then you hit me with a Canadians going to the Stanley Cup clip. Mina, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued by the actual game that the question was about. Yeah. And I am rooting for the Islanders in large part because I love our colleague Damian Woody, who, breaking news, is going to the game as we speak to give a rousing pregame speech to the fans. And if you doubt his credentials, watch him celebrating after their last win.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun.
I love this. He's the best.
Hockey really is the absolute best sport to see live. I will die on that hill. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I am also intrigued. I guess I have to be intrigued. I live in New York City. The Islanders, that's a team that is from New York. I just want to say this. Damian Woody, you will never have to pay for a drink in Penn Station again. And that's not because the bar is going to give you drinks. It's because everyone on the LIRR is just going to hand you their half-open beer and ask you to chug it with them.
I can't remember the last time I was happy as Damian Woody looked.
I know. Oh, my God. There were so many moments in the last 2 weeks where I had the camera just like ready. I was like, please let this be.
Oh, for the Sixers?
Where the Sixers,
this is sad.
I've been trying to make it about him, and he hasn't had the opportunity to do so.
Are we done? Are we done yet?
We did it, and you did it. Friday, the week is over. If you want more Mina Kimes, she's going to be on NFL Live today, or you can listen to her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. If you want more Pablo Torre, what's wrong with you? But his podcast is called ESPN Daily. It's very, very, very good, despite your opinions on him, one way or the other. It's a very good podcast. Mine's called Sports. It's got a question mark on it. We love you so much.